Hello, everybody, and welcome to Everything Paranormal with Mark and Jeff. I hope you've had a great week. I know we've had a lot of fun here, and but actually we're doing quite well booking a lot of guests. And I want to thank my guests for calling in early tonight because, well, it's been kind of chaotic, and it's what happens when you're on Blog Talk Radio sometime, and you got to kind of go with the flow. So here we are. Let me introduce you our first guest. We'll get right to it. This first guest is she's actually a paranormal investigator that we've worked closely with. She is an author, and she's the EVP queen. EVP queen, as you know them, unbelievable. Welcome to Everything Paranormal, Joni Mahan. Hi, Joni.
Thank you. Hi.
How are you? How have you been? Jeez, I haven't talked to you in forever.
Oh, good. Good. Busy. I feel like I'm always doing something lately. I have to schedule myself home so I have time to write.
Yeah. So tell our listeners about yourself and where they can find your book and, well, exactly, you know, what your book is.
Well, you can pretty much describe me. I like that paranormal or the EVP queen. You know, I can put that on my on my resume.
There is no doubt about it. Absolutely. You come up with amazing stuff.
Yeah, I think, you know, I feel like they're drawn to me, and they just feel freely to speak with me sometimes. But, yeah, I've got, I have six books, and they're all on Amazon.com, and the one I think we're talking about tonight is Bones in the Basement, which follows the story of the haunted Victorian mansion in Gardner, Massachusetts, which has been on quite a few paranormal shows. And I don't think you've gotten to be there yet, have you?
Oh, no, I have. Jeff and I think, have been there. Well, he's been there more than me. Jeff is fairly late. He'll be here soon. He's on his way. But my stuff, I think I've been there two times.
Okay, all right. Yeah. I couldn't remember if you had or not. I knew Jeff had been there once because he was pushing. We were standing on the sidewalk, and a ghost had followed us outside, and he said, "Watch this, I'll push it back." And I was pretty amazed because I, you know, being clairaudient, I hear the tone that they make, and it was like somebody turned the volume down and pushed it right back inside. So I remember being there with Jeff that one time.
Yeah, he had said something about that. I experienced something in the basement where I remember there was something behind me, and people that could sense it, people more sensitive than me, were seeing this guy, this big, tall, dark figure was kind of bobbing back and forth between me, you know, behind me, you know, left to right, mm-hmm. left to right. So.
Oh, yeah. Yep, that happens frequently. In fact, I was there by myself in the house. I had friends coming to join me, and I was there by myself in the house for the first time ever, and I was there for a couple of hours, and a big thunderstorm blew in, and I guess it was tornado warnings and stuff in the Gardner area, and my friend Marion, who's the caretaker of the house, called me, and she said, you know, there's a tornado coming, or there may be a tornado coming. You better, you know, take cover. And I said, I'll take my chances with the tornado before I go down in that basement with the dark, grumpy guy.
Yeah, I don't like it down there either. He didn't like me either. You got some good EVPs from that one, that investigation. We did that, I don't know, 3 years ago or something, a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Years ago.
Yeah, unfortunately, the house is closed down for investigations now.
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe, you know, they have a lot of work they have to do on it before the town will let them reopen it. So,
no,
doing it.
I understand you guys are working at some kind of fundraising, or are you trying to, you're looking for volunteers or donations? Or tell us what you need.
We set up a nonprofit organization so that we could really structure the fundraising, and we have a board, and we take votes on everything, you know, how we're going to raise the money and what we're going to spend it on, and we've had a lot of contractors in giving us estimates, and the house really, it needs a new roof, and it needs new eaves, and if it doesn't have that within the next 2 years, probably it won't last much. It'll be past the point of no return, but it's such a beautiful house. We love it, and a lot of people feel the same way. We said we're going to do everything we can and try to save this house before it's too late, regardless of you know, what the owners decide to do, you know, it's almost beside the point. We want to save the house, and we know they can't afford to save it. And if they sold it, nobody would probably be able to afford to do it either. So we're going to do our best.
Right. We need, as soon as Jeff gets here, I'm going to have to put him on the spot and pressure him because he's a carpenter. So, let's see, I got
to
get...
Oh, I know. I already kind of reached out to him and asked if he'd be willing to... you know, to help. We have a lot of friends in the paranormal world who are in construction.
Yep.
One of my friends that came out over the weekend is also a contractor. And so I thought, you know, how great would that be if we had all of our contractor friends together and helped us? So
that would be good. That would be really good. It's for a great cause, people. This Haunted Victorian Mansion is just incredible. So let's talk a little bit about your book. I've been reading it. I love it. I couldn't put it down. I was bringing you to the beach with me every day.
Yeah, and I thought I hadn't been to the beach this summer. That's great.
yeah, sorry, but boy, yeah, I made sure I had some beach time, and that's a real great book and the insight. I had no idea of Edwin's and Lillian's experiences before, you know, when they first started to move in, before they actually moved in, while they were still living in Boston, or.
Mm-hmm.
And some, you know, when she'd bring things there, and she'd see things and experience things. And can you tell listeners a little bit about the book? It's very intriguing.
Yeah, I had become friends with them for, and so I've been hearing a little bit of the stories here and there. But I didn't realize the full extent of the haunting until I dug in and decided to write the book. And that's when I started finding that. You know, it went a lot deeper than even I knew, and even they knew for that matter, because as I started interviewing people that were a part of the story, more stories kept coming out. In fact, stories are still coming out this week. I may either be adding on to this book or writing an additional follow-up book, because we keep getting more and more stories to add to it.
So people are no longer investigating at all. Do you think that stirred things up after a while? You know, more things going and just...
Absolutely. And anybody else that you really talk to will say the same thing. The ghost got burnt out. You know, it's like having people coming into your living room and, you know, putting their finger in your chest and saying, talk to me. After a while, I think, you know, you'd start pushing back, and that's what they did.
I think so. Well, things became more violent where Lillian got pinched out of the bed, and things became more and more negative, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, in their defense, they really wanted answers, and they still want answers. They're still looking for answers. You know, why did this happen to them, and who is it that's haunting the house? And, you know, is there anything they can do to release these souls so they're not trapped in the house forever? So, you know, as scared as they were by, you know, the escalating experiences, they're still intrigued by, you know, what is causing all this.
Do we have any idea or any clue who the dominant spirit is?
Yeah, we have a lot of ideas. I mean, it's funny because the psychic mediums come through and they, you know, even not knowing anything about the story, they pick up on very similar things. They pick up, most of them will pick up on Eno Sari, who was the man that burned to death. And some people say it was by spontaneous combustion in the master bedroom in 1963. He is still there. And, in fact, today some of the board members were there letting in a contractor for, I think, an estimate on the electrical. And while they were there, somebody knocked on the door, and it was a woman, and she came in, and she identified herself as Eno Sari's niece.
Oh, wow.
She had heard about my book and wanted to find out more about what was going on with her uncle. And so she came in the house, and she was, according to Marion, she was pleading with Eno to cross over to leave that house, but he didn't need to be there any longer. So that was kind of... Yeah, I told them, give her a copy of my book, but she has to, in trade, give us a picture of Eno Sari, because we don't even know what he looks like.
That's huge. So, yeah, there was no picture. But he was not a friendly soul, right, or well-liked? Is that right?
I hear that, he was a heavy drinker. He was a World War II veteran, and from what I learned, he had a head injury. He was only in the war for a year, and he had a head injury and was honorably discharged. And he had a splint in his head that caused him massive headaches. And to alleviate the pain, he drank, and his drink of choice was moonshine.
Wow.
So when he wasn't drinking, they said when he wasn't drunk, he was a funny guy and he was very pleasant to be around. But when he was drunk, he was a jerk.
Right.
And if he'd been a couple of days without a drink, he was really a jerk. So
wow.
I think it depends on what phase you would catch him at.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, an alcoholic, but I can see why. I get it with all the pain and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they thought he may be smoking in bed, but there were no signs of that, and the fire just stayed in the bed, right? It didn't even hit the ceiling, right?
No, it didn't hit the floor, it didn't hit the ceiling or the walls or anything. Just him in the bed. But I mean, more than likely, you know, according to we talked to the fire lieutenant that actually was there when that happened, and back when they were filming Ghost Adventures, they called in the fire department to help them stage a scene. And I got to talk with the lieutenant, and I was asking him a ton of questions. And he thought that probably what happened was he was drinking and smoking in bed. He said he probably spilled moonshine all over himself, and that stuff's like gasoline.
Right.
And it probably burned him up enough that, you know, it was enough to take his life, but it wasn't enough to... Well, I don't know. You know, it could have been a catalyst for a huge fire. You know, maybe that's part. Maybe the story is really why the house didn't burn down. Maybe there were some other factors at play that stopped it from burning.
Yeah, well, it's quite a story. I don't know. Poor
yeah.
Guy.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Mm-hmm.
What a way
yeah.
to go. So, I have so many questions. I don't even know what to begin.
Well, you asked me about the entities, and I just told you about him. There are others that have been seen and heard. I mean, Edwin saw a full-bodied apparition pop up in his face in his bed in his office when he was working, and he's really not sure. At first, he thought it might have been, you know, sorry, but somebody told him it might have been, you know, one of the sons that lived in the house. So we're not sure who that is. He was also seeing a woman that was floating near the window in a white dress here crying.
Man.
And he could feel her grief. He said it was the most just utter despair that he'd ever felt. And he could, you know, her grief became his. And, you know, we don't know who she was either. So, you know, and there's probably a dozen ghosts in that house and three portals. So who knows how many more come and go at will. It's so deeply haunted it can't be cleansed. I've heard that from numerous psychics. It's not cleanable.
No, just can't do it, huh? You have our friend Barbara check it out? Of course you have, right?
Yeah, Barbara's been there a couple times.
Yeah.
And her assessment is if it were ever cleansed, we would have to have probably five psychic mediums
yep.
with her ability. And probably also a priest there to do an exorcism at the same time. And even then, the damage that it would cause to do that would be irreparable. To the house and probably the people doing it, it would cause harm trying to do that.
Oh wow! Why do you think there's so much negative energy? It's obviously it was before. You know, before
there's a lot of theories. Definitely a lot of theories. I mean, you know, the land is
right.
near water.
Mm-hmm.
It's built with a you know the foundation is granite slabs.
Okay.
But will we be on a ley line?
Oh, the ley line.
Yeah. So it holds in a lot of energy.
Yep.
And the other thing that I always find intriguing is the house was built, he was a mason. S.K. Pierce, the man that built the house, was a mason. And there's a lot of little symbols hidden all over the house. And if you know what they mean, then you understand. You pick them out right away. And the house is also 6,661 square feet, which is a little odd to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a 666, kind of like your phone number.
Oh, okay. I know. Joe's at for Skype. That's my Skype, 666. Works out.
Oh. But, so some people think that, I mean, if you just look at the house, I mean, you could take a picture of that house and put it in a dictionary next to haunted house, and people would go, oh, yeah, you know, because it looks just like what you would picture a haunted house to look like.
Right.
So was it created to hold in spiritual energy? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, that's funny. That Edwin, that's how he, after they had purchased the house, he saw it in a book about New England's most haunted houses, right? He's like, oh, my God, there's our house. I don't, did he?
Yeah.
Didn't
yeah, he did. He saw it in Thomas D'Agostino's book, Haunted Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And he actually has a copy there at the house now, and that Thomas signed for him. But and Thomas did the opening to my book for me, so I thought that was really nice. But because he was really the first person, or the first inkling that they had that the house was haunted.
Yeah.
I guess they had heard. I think Lillian might have found it on the internet. Maybe she saw the Ghost Event or Ghost Hunters episode and said, "Oh my God, there's our house!" And so he went to the library, reading about all the things that supposedly happened in his house, and it was like.
That's...
Yeah, this is before they bought it, so they did know going into it that it was haunted, but she didn't believe in ghosts at all, and he says right. He didn't, but I think he was kind of on the fence. I think his thought was, a lot of it was probably blown up just to, get people, interested, so.
Yeah, well, Edwin didn't believe it all from what I see or from what I read until he saw a couple of things, and it's like, oh, my God, it's real, and I can see.
He was always trying to figure it out. He's a researcher for an insurance company, and so what he does for a living is he figures out why things, he tries to get to the bottom of things, and that's what he kept doing. Every time something would happen, he'd try to figure out how did that happen. There's got to be a logical reason for it. So, no, he didn't buy into it right away.
Right.
But he bought into it a lot faster than she did. It took her a long time before she had even admit that the house was haunted.
Well, he saw some more creepy stuff, although Lillian saw in the basement, she saw the shadow hovering overhead, right? And that's one of the first things. That would make a believer out of me. Joni, on an investigation, you see that. It's like, wow. Wow. But
I know. Yeah, that would definitely do it. they went over, they brought family over right away, and this is towards the beginning of the book, but, they're sitting in the kitchen having pizza, and all of a sudden they hear things fall down. It sounded like, bowling balls being thrown down the grand staircase, and they ran out thinking that Lillian had fallen down the stairs because she'd left to go down to the basement to get something.
Yeah.
And she comes up at the same time they come out of the kitchen, and there's nothing there, nobody there. The doors are locked. There's no explanation for it. And so they go back in the kitchen, because they don't know what else to do. It's like, okay, that was weird. And they go back in the kitchen to start eating, and one of the metal planters goes
planter
across the floor.
Well, you see, like, right in front of them. It's something like quite a bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, that was a lot, right there at the same time. It's like, okay, you don't believe in ghosts? We're going to show you what a ghost is. Yeah.
You know, somebody, give me a sign. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
That was, it's like, holy crap.
That would convince me.
And then the family was still kind of avoiding the subject, not talking about it. It's like, oh, my God, right? They just did not want to admit that they might have ghosts in the house.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they fell in love with the house. Lillian has loved Victorian since she was a child, and she used to walk past one on her way to school, and it was a beautiful, glorious Victorian similar to this one, and she said, one of these days, I'm going to have a house like that, and I'm going to live in that house instead of having to walk by it and look at it and admire it. And so it really was a dream come true for her, and it was going to have to take a whole lot of convincing before anything got between her and her dream. So just the fact that she's not living there anymore, I think, if you know Lillian, she can be, she's very strong. And for something to chase her out of that house, it would have to be a really bad situation, which it was.
What's curious, how it ties together is Edwin had a dream, and it actually ended up being about a room in the house, right?
Yeah, the night before they went to see the house for the first time, he had a dream about the house, basically. He didn't know that it was about the house until he got there, but in the dream, he saw himself floating up the sidewalk towards his house and coming in the front doors, and going into a room with big white doors, and they opened, and the room was filled with people having a party, and he could, it was so real. The textures were real. You could see the way the people were dressed, and the, see the drinks in their hands, eyes clinking together, and there was one man sitting in the middle of the room, and he had on a black hat, and he had a black mustache, and he was the only one that seemed to notice Edwin was there. It was almost like Edwin was the ghost, and they were all alive, and he acknowledged and, like, nodded towards him, and then Edwin woke up, and then the next day, they came to see the house, and as he came through, he saw those white doors, and they opened them, and it was the same room. Everything was exactly the same, except there were no people drinking and no man in black. So that was pretty chilling for him.
So he dreamt about the house the way it would have been back in the heyday, you know, when
yeah.
Pierce.
And that's not
thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's not even the extent of it. A lot of people have had dreams about the house, and I didn't realize that either until I started interviewing people for the book. Marion, who ended up being the caretaker of the house, she just becomes friends. She's not a paranormal investigator or anything. I mean, she's kind of forced to become one because of, you know, her situation now, but she never watched ghost shows or anything. She just loved the house, and when they moved in, she thought, you know, she had heard that they moved in from Boston, and she thought, I think I'll go introduce myself, and she wanted to bring some flowers over that she was transplanting from their shop.
Oh, what
and
neighbor.
She went in to meet him, and she didn't get to really go in the house. She just met Lillian. Lillian came back to the garage, talked for a long time, and that night she had a dream that she was in the house walking around. She opened the door with her own keys and was walking around room to room checking the rooms to make sure everything was okay. And she didn't understand that because she had just met him. It didn't make any sense. And now that's her role. She's the caretaker. She goes over periodically and checks the house to make sure there's no water damage or anybody, nobody's broken in.
Oh, wow. See, that's funny. I know Marion. I thought she was a paranormal investigator. I didn't even know she was the caretaker.
No, she went on her very first investigation with me to the Houghton Mansion back a few years ago.
Yeah.
And we both saw an apparition in the basement. It was
that'll
the same time. It was really cool.
Cool. What was that like?
It was neat. You know, you always hope when you're on investigation you see something, and normally you don't. You know, people watch TV shows and they think, you know, ghost hunters see something in every investigation.
Well,
you and I know that usually doesn't happen.
Yep.
But we were sitting there in the basement, and we were having an EVP session, and she and I happened to be facing one direction, and we saw something that was, from what we figured out, it looked like the bottom of a little girl's dress, and it was kind of lit up. And it kind of darted through the room, and it ran under the tripod where the camera is, so we didn't get it on film. And then it darted around for a little bit, and then it dipped away. And she said, "Did you see that?" And I said, "Oh my God, thank you! Somebody else saw that." So
it's doing something else validates it.
Oh yeah, because you can't. And we knew it wasn't, you know, lights from cars or anything, because it's very dark in there, and you don't see any lights come into that room. There's no windows in the room we were in, so. It wouldn't even been possible, but it was really cool.
Yep. It's way cool. So how many books did you say you wrote?
Published. I just finished my seventh one. I'm doing the final edits. So I have another one coming out soon, too, that's going to be fiction.
Can you just sneak peek on it?
Yeah, it's called Winter Woods. It's going to be a trilogy, and it involves some pretty interesting characters. My main character is an albino girl. Who's a little bit shunned, and there's a Ouija board in there, and there's a crow that leads them from place to place. And there's kind of a mystery involved in people dying, and it's definitely something if somebody's interested in spooky things would enjoy. So.
Well, that's cool. I wouldn't call Bones in the Basement fictional at all, right? Would you?
No, it's a true paranormal story, but I did write it. I wrote it like a novel because I wanted it to be suspenseful, so I took everybody through the story from their perspective and, you know, tried to build up. Like, I think a lot of people, a lot of books about locations, they just overload the readers with information about the house and about this happened here, this happened there, and the history and everything. And I tried to kind of interspace it in the book. As they found out, I would put it in there, and they would try to figure out what does this mean. So I tried to make it at least a page turner.
Yeah, that was it was great. You know, that house, it was. That was one of my first investigations with you, Jeff, my brother, and I went with Joe and Hilton Gardner, and I met actually Lillian and Edwin were there. We met them, and yeah, it was a while back. And the place is beautiful. I remember walking in; it was breathtaking. It was up the staircase, and the place is amazing. It's so beautiful.
It is gorgeous. I mean, he was a furniture manufacturer and gardener. So when he went to build his house, he built a house that was fitting of his stature. And the woodwork in that house is still spectacular, even though the house is 139 years old. It's still, the woodwork is pristine.
Down to the last detail.
Huh?
Down to the last detail with the woodwork. I remember that, the cup and the railings and the doors and everything.
Well, even the hinges on the doors are like works of art. It's just, and something, one of my friends points out a lot is just the doors are, each of the doors is at least 300 pounds. It's a heavy, solid wood, and they are still hinged so perfectly you could open and close them with one finger. So he knew what he was doing when he built that house.
Yeah, it was amazing. And it's people, if you can help out in any way, save the Victorian Mansion and Garden of Mass, please do help out.
Yeah, we have a GoFundMe set up. We're trying to take donations, or we'll take help. We have to get that roof fixed before we do anything else, because it's not worth fixing anything below it until we get that fixed. But, we'll take donations of supplies or, manpower, anything people want to give us. They can contact me on Facebook or through my website, JoniMahan.com, or on the Victorian Mansions page. They can find that. We've got a website set up as well, and there's a contact me information there. So there's a lot of places people can reach out to us to find out what they can do to help us.
That would be huge. The place is beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
I'm donating half of my profits to the foundation, to the Save the Victorian Mansion nonprofit foundation. So half of everything I make for profits goes right back into the house, which really makes me feel good, because I mean, I really can't afford to do it, I'll be honest, but it's something that it's a passion of mine. And if I do anything in this life that's worthwhile, saving this house would really mean a lot to me, more than anything monetary I could buy with the money.
Well, that's amazing of you. You, I think, are now going to be nominated for sainthood.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I probably have done some other things to counter that.
That's huge. That's huge, you. Very nice. I have actually another question about when did you get started in the whole, when did you write your first book? What was your first book?
My first book was Lightning Strikes, and it's part of a trilogy. It's a dystopian, which kind of follows the Hunger Games or Twilight or one of those kind of end-of-the-world books kind of. And it really, I started writing it because when we had the ice storm, I think it was 2008, we had an ice storm come through, maybe it was 2009, but it took down all the power, and we had no power for 4 days. And I sat there and looked around my house with all the useless electronic and electric items, and I thought, what would it be like if this is what life was from here on out? What if the electricity never came back on? And then I kind of wrapped a story around it that, what if terrorists actually came in and released a virus and killed off the majority of the population? And the story follows a 16-year-old girl trying to just trying to survive. And in the end, she ends up, it's a good versus evil book, and it's gotten very good reviews. My trilogy is one of my favorites. It's not gotten a lot of attention because it's fiction versus, the real paranormal. But, if anybody wants something to read that's pretty, it's spooky too. It's a page turner. You won't be able to put it down once you pick it up. So.
They were great books. What made you decide to start writing books?
I've always been a writer. Ever since high school, I kind of found my niche in a creative writing class, and I realized that I had an ability to do it, and I just kept with it. And I wrote 6 books before I wrote Lightning Strikes, and I kept trying to go through the agent route and getting an agent, because that's the route you, the only route you were allowed at that point, you to get an agent before you could get a publisher, because publishers wouldn't talk to writers. They would only talk to agents.
Oh, wow.
And getting an agent is like getting, you have a better chance of getting struck by lightning, which is kind of funny.
That's,
so after I wrote Lightning Strikes, huh?
That's how they do it now with the, a lot of the radio guests, the radio show guests.
Yeah.
I basically deal with agents now. That's funny.
Wow.
It just kind of goes that way. But
well,
yeah.
Luckily enough, that things have opened up, because after I wrote Lightning Strikes, I said I refuse to give up on this book. I was turned down by probably 70 agents. I had one that worked with me for a year. And then she turned me down. She said she didn't think it had the right pacing or something. And, you know, which is funny because every one of my reviews says, can't put it down, can't put it down. So her loss. But I self-published. And when I found out through Amazon.com you can self-publish. And
yeah.
So I have it in paperback and ebook, and it's done very well as far as reviews. People, you know, have really taken to it. And I had a chance to publish without having to go through, you know, the agent route.
Yep. Well, Bones in the Basement, I read, and then I passed it on to a friend who passed it on to a friend, and so far you got 3 people that love it, absolutely love it. It's hard to put it down.
Well, maybe those 3 people could write me a review. That'd be wonderful.
Okay, I can do that. I'm sure I can get my breast. And that's why I also like holding the paperback. A lot of people interview, you know, will send me PDFs or, you know, which are fine.
Okay.
They're fine on the tablet, but I'd rather hold the book. I like to hold the book. Go to the beach, hold the book. It's great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, a lot of people are like that.
So
this book is interesting, you know, in the fact that if you get it electronically, and you can get a paperback, because some people like that better, but if you get it electronically and you're reading it on a tablet, you have the option of going directly to listen to the EVPs and watching the videos that were captured there. And
cool.
There's links to articles and news clips and things. So there's other, it's like a very interactive book.
And folks, believe me, she is the queen of the EVPs. she lived like I can think of one investigation we did up here in the North Shore, and she got it probably like 1 hour and 45 minutes for you to get home, and by the time I get home, get back on my laptop, she's already posting like a bunch of stuff she found. Oh my God! And you're gifted in that sense. You really.
Yeah. Thank you. I used to be a lot more diligent about listening to my audio. I still have probably 5 or 6 sessions that I need to go back and listen to.
It's hard.
I've recorded.
Yeah. It takes time.
But,
it's difficult to catch up, isn't it? It's tough.
Oh, I know. It is. And, you know, right now my focus is trying to get, you know, my next book out. So I'm always working on another book. And so I haven't had as much time to really focus. And plus, I've been involved in this fundraiser for the Victorians. That's taken a lot of time trying to put together things and meeting with people. But it's been fun.
Where's Lily and Edwin living now? Back in
They live in Brockton. Yeah, they live in his sister's basement. They're still there. They've been there since 2011.
Wow.
And, you know, they're hurting. You know, he's having to work 2 jobs, and she's working, you know, as much as she can, and she's been having some health issues. So, you know, they cannot afford to fix this house on their own. And, you know, yes, they probably could sell it, but, you know, with the damage that it's, you know, life's handed to it because it's an old house,
right.
They probably couldn't get back what they paid for it. So they're kind of stuck, you know, and it's, the current situation is it's not going to get fixed unless we're able to do something. So that's why we're helping.
Yeah. Wow. It is kind of drastic. I don't know. Honestly, maybe just pretty soon it's just time to sell it. Before, I don't know. Who knows?
Well, and our goal is, despite it has nothing to do with what they're going to do with the house after we're finished, we just want to save the house. And save a piece of history in Gardner. You know, it wouldn't matter to me if they gave it away, you know, or they opened it up to investigate. So I think their goal is they would love to open it up as an inn so people could
come tonight. Oh, God,
I think that wouldn't that be amazing? I mean, there's nothing in this area. Lizzie Borden, and then you have to go up to state of Connecticut to find the next one, pretty much.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Point. It's a great place to stay. Did I stay there? No, I don't know if we stayed there. Jeff and I?
I think you guys, we stayed probably late, but we didn't spend the night.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. We did Lizzie Borden. That was kind of on. I thought the Victorian mansion was much better. It was,
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Much more haunted.
Yeah.
Although you and I, our group had a very interesting experience at Lizzie Borden up in that servants' room. And I tell this story a lot when people ask me interesting paranormal stories. We were up sitting on the floor doing an EVP session, and your recorder battery ran out. And you said, oh, no, my battery's dead. And all of a sudden, we hear something rolling across the floor.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, a battery rolled right up the straps at your shoe.
It hit me in the fingertips. I was sitting on the floor, you know, so my legs out in front, my arms to both sides, and doing an EVP, and that's what I said. I said, oh, my battery's dying. Boom, hits me in the fingertip. Unbelievable. I'm glad glad you remember that story, because I tell it, too.
Oh, yeah, I tell it all the time. I tell it on other radio shows, too.
Yeah, that was a great one. Yeah, that made me, because I'm kind of thinking, there's not really much going on, but what else did you get from there? Did you get any good EVPs or good?
A couple, but it was, you know, really hard to say whether it was anything or not.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. A couple little ones. I don't think it was, it was interesting, but it wasn't nearly as haunted as the Victorian.
Oh, no, yeah, that's active.
Yeah, I spent the night there the other night, and it's, I think, my fourth time I've slept there overnight. And every time I sleep there, I say, I am never doing that again.
Yeah, I don't think I wouldn't feel comfortable. I love this, and I live for this, but I don't like to sleep in a place like that.
They didn't really bother me. They didn't do anything. The other people that with me, they were fine. They all slept through the night. But being a sensitive, I can't pretend there's nothing there because I can hear them, you know.
Yeah.
And they were buzzing around my bed all night long.
I'm sure they were. Please.
Oh, yeah.
Did they interact at all? Or?
Yeah, they were making noises. There were pops on the walls and stuff. And I kept getting poked. This last time, I wasn't poked as much. The last time before, every time I'd almost go to sleep, it was like a finger would poke into my sleeping bag. And I was hearing the tone. I hear, I'm clairaudient, so I hear sounds. It's almost like just ghosts made noises. That's what I hear. And I can distinguish them by the sound they make. And children make a sound that I just understand. It's like a circling. It's different from the other sounds. So I'm hearing the sound of children. And they were all over the room, like they were playing tag or something. And I get poked, and then, you know, I hear them running around. And then fingers ran down like they were playing, like you're playing a piano, ran down my leg, like from my hip all the way to my ankle a couple times. And there was no denying that that happened. It was like, it wasn't like, oh, my covers must have shifted or, you know, that was definitely a ghost touch. It was crazy. I mean, it didn't scare me, but it was annoying because I couldn't go to sleep. Every time I tried to go to sleep, they'd wake me back up again.
They were just messing with you.
Oh, yeah. They were.
But you're always respectful when you try to communicate and everything. You're very good. You explain what you're doing, and you're respectful.
I tell them when I go, sometimes I'll have a recorder just when we're going there and hanging out, and sometimes I don't. But when I do, I always say, you know, look, I'm not bugging you and asking you what your name is and why are you here. Consider me your servant. If there's something that you need, that you want, you tell me, and I'll do my best to make it happen.
Yep.
And, you know, we go from there. So.
Yep. That's what I've been doing more of lately. It's more about you. What do you want?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk to us? What do you want to tell us?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. It's all good.
Yeah.
And I've been
busy
doing things, so it's been fun. Good stuff.
Good. I might have a case for you, too, so you'll have to check my Facebook wall. That's crazy. Somebody sent me a picture. It was a girl taking a selfie, and in her glasses you can see a reflection. And at first I thought it was her.
Yeah.
And I blew it up, and I realized that it's not her. It looks like an old woman.
Wow.
So,
nobody's in the room with her, and, you know, in the back somewhere.
No, she was in the bathroom. You can see that she's leaning over. It looked like a sink. So that's why I thought it was her reflection in the mirror. But it's not her when you look at the picture. So I don't know what's going on. I'm quick to debunk things. I'm always looking for the reason. And I get people putting pictures on my wall all the time and saying, do you see the face, you know, and in the window? And I really think a lot of it's just paradelia. You know, we try to find faces in bushes or in glass reflections, and you can find a face just about in anything if you try hard enough.
Yeah.
This was no doubt.
Yep. People, you know, yeah, that's true. People, everybody has a ghost now, you know. And what I find, people are saying more and more that they're negative. They're,
they're demons.
They're demonic.
Yeah.
I'll touch base on something with you. You have met the Ghost Adventures crew, right? Zach and the guys.
I did.
I love them, love that show. But now, what you saw, are they real or what is going on with them? Because then did Aaron actually get fired?
No, that was a hoax. That was on. It was almost like The Onion. You know, it's like a satire webpage.
God.
And that was not true. They were. I really can't say I spent a lot of time with them because they weren't there. I was there with the production team, Marion and I, for 3 days, so we got to watch all the filming, all the B-roll things. You know, we actually got to be part of some of the recreations. Not that they made it, but we got. Cut, but we got to be there and watch the filming. It was really cool. When they showed up, they were nice. They were, you know, they stood and took pictures with us and talked with us for a minute, but they had a job to do. But when they were there, I was standing outside. They had us across the street so we didn't make any noise, which was understandable, and I was standing with Edwin because he was going to go in with them, and then I stayed until he came back out because we were worried that he didn't have a ride back to Boston. I thought it was going to be his ride if he needed it. So I stayed around while they were filming. We could hear them from outside, you know, and they'd find something and be like, whoa, what? You know?
Yeah.
And they were the only ones in the house. It was just like they show on TV. Nobody else was in there. And the evidence that they found was exactly the same voices, the same places, the same sort of thing that we find when we're there frequently. So my feeling is they are the real deal.
What was their biggest piece there? I forget. It was what was their biggest find there for them?
Their EVPs. There are a couple that they captured up on the third floor.
Yeah.
And one of them was a little girl that said, hi. And we've gotten that same little girl.
Yeah.
And then another one, Edwin said, who's the lady of the house? And it came across the ghost box. It said, Lillian.
Yeah. Yep, I remember.
Yeah.
So those guys are for real, and all that stuff is a hoax, and Aaron's still with them?
Yes.
Yeah. I do like that.
They're the real deal. Yeah, I don't like the way they did a lot of provoking in the beginning. I think they've kind of eased off that a lot, especially from what I can tell.
Yep.
And they were respectful when they were in the house, and they didn't call out anything and try to, you know, they definitely didn't manufacture any evidence. They didn't have to. I mean, you know, anybody can walk in that house with a recorder and come out with, you know, a dozen EVPs. It's just, they're talkative there. It's unreal.
Yeah. Remember it? Do you remember it? Lizzie Borden, they said, somebody asked the same question, you know, were they real? And they kind of said the same thing, that they had so much real evidence that they couldn't even use it all on the show. They don't really fake things.
Well, you know what I find interesting is that they've become aware that they are sensitive to spiritual energy, which is something you didn't see in the early shows, but later shows you do see them. Yeah, they have different triggers that they feel and they understand when something's near. And I think that happens to a lot of investigators.
Like all of us, that we all experience that. Me too. I think we all become way more sensitive.
Yeah. You know, and maybe we were already were sensitive, and that's what drew us to it. You know, it's like the chicken or the egg, but either way, we end up there and we start feeling it. Like even Marion, you know, the caretaker, the Victorian, would have never told you she was a sensitive, but she's starting to sense it. In fact, I had her at my house not too long ago, and I sent both her and Sandy upstairs separately, and I said, just go up. go up and come back down one at a time, and then, you know, tell me what you thought. And she, Marion came back down. She said, well, I'm not even going in your bedroom. She said, your home office, she said, there's somebody in there I don't like. And she was really accurate. It was amazing.
Yeah.
For somebody that didn't believe it, you know, or didn't, you know, get into the paranormal. So everybody, I think it grows on you after a while.
We love that. We love when we have the non-believers that come along. Come on in. You know, I was talking about, we kind of missed the meetup group. The whole meetup thing was kind of fun. That's how we got started. That's how we met you guys.
I remember that first time. Did your wayward brother ever show up on the show? Is he still not there?
Oh, I'm trying to cover for him. But I'm on your watch.
In trouble.
So I'm going to get all kinds of sound effects with, like, applause and entrance. And I'm kind of – he's home on my way. So he's doing the father thing tonight. He's going to his kid's school and going to see the teachers like I did last night. So
Oh, fun stuff.
Okay.
The first time we met him was at a meetup, and you couldn't make it. I don't think you didn't come to the first walks in, you know, somebody off the street we'd never met before. And we had, like, the most amazing experience that night. It was the craziest of the Park Sam, scary crazy.
I remember he was in these pictures, and I look, he's posting these pictures on Facebook. He's in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
It was a wheelchair. Then it was a barber chair.
We had a great time, but it was, you know, we were chased out of the building, and then, you know, we ended up going back after, you know, a couple months, or I don't know, 6 months, and we fought back and pushed, you know, we stood our ground with it. But it was crazy. Yeah. We had some people in the meetup that didn't believe in ghosts, and by the end of the time, they just took off. They were going to spend the night, and they were like, hell no, and they took off. I think, you know, the one guy is still running.
Yeah, that's what I was going with that. You had your skeptics, and it's, oh, my God, and he just takes off. It's funny. I went back the next time. That's when I met you guys, I think. We went back. Like, it was soon after, too. It was right after that. It was a lot of activity up there.
I know. I wanted to go back this summer, but I didn't see any events set up. There was one event set up, but I couldn't go because I had something. I think it was in Indiana or something, visiting my family. But I didn't see any more events, so I'm going to have to. I guess I'm going to have to miss it this year unless they set something up between now and when it gets too cold.
That's right. Yeah. It's actually going to get cold real soon. I hate to say.
Yeah, I'm going to Rolling Hills Asylum next weekend. Very excited about that.
Which, have you been there before?
Yeah, I've been there twice before.
Yeah.
It's in East Bethany, Maine. Way up near Buffalo. It's pretty far away, but that's one of the scariest places I've ever been to. So I'm really, really geared up for this. We're going up with a great group of people, and we'll have a lot of fun, no doubt.
Well, please tell. Why is it scary?
It used to be a poor farm and an asylum, so it has a lot of, it's like the Victorian, there's a lot of layers of hauntings, and there was a lot of abuse and a lot of just being dumped there. You know, people didn't, you know, if you lost your house or, you know, if a woman owned land and her husband died, she ended up at the poor farm because women weren't allowed to own property, and kids were dumped there. There was a boy named Roy that had giganticism, where he grew really, really tall, and his parents didn't know what to do with him, and they ended up dumping him there, and he ended up living there his whole life, and he's still there in death. He roams the hallway. So it's there's a lot of different activity there. It just goes real deep. I've come back with a lot of EVPs from there.
What has been your scariest moment? What's freaked you out the most?
That's an easy one. My last book, The Soul Collector, when I went through that whole experience, you know, getting a very negative attachment. And they follow me. They still follow me. But I haven't had one as bad as that since then. So something that everybody's been trying to help me try to repel them and keep myself from getting so many negative attachments. And your brother's helped me a couple times. The Soul Collector was the scariest because it was a very negative, very strong attachment and possibly demonic, but I always hesitate to go there because everybody else goes there. And he was bad, though, and it took a lot. He was very sticky. It took a lot to get him off of me. He was determined he was going to take me down. So, and he almost did it. You know, it was pretty scary towards the end there.
Where do you think you picked that one up?
Oh, I know where I picked it up. I picked it up at the Rutland Prison Camp.
Yeah.
In Massachusetts, in the, at the TB, the ruins of the TB hospital. It's not, you know, it's not as bad, I don't think, as it was before. I think, you know, we got rid of the bad one. But I think he had been just waiting, biding his time, waiting for somebody really good to come along that he could attach to. And my guard was down, and I was not in a good place when I went out there emotionally. And he got me, and he did not let go till the very end.
That's true. When you're down and out, we're thinking negative or sending negative vibes, that's when the negative attachments will attach themselves, when you do what we do.
Yeah, I know. Well, I went on to, after I wrote that book, I had so many people contact me and say, you know, hey, I think I'm a sensitive too. What can I do to protect myself? So I went on to write a book called Ghostly Defenses, and it's only a 99-cent download. It's the cheapest I can put it up for.
I'm in.
And I wrote it to help other people like me, because so many people just go out and go ghost hunting. It looks like fun. And if you're sensitive, you can't just go poke around these really bad places, because you could end up with a soul collector attached to you like I did.
Yeah.
So I went through and talked about a lot of, you know, the precautions that you can take, and just talking about the different types of sensitive people. You know, people keep telling me that I am a medium, that I need to quit calling myself a sensitive. Because my abilities have definitely grown in the last 2 years. But, you know, it starts off with something slight that people may not realize. I've had a lot of people say, oh, my gosh, you know, I hear an ear ringing from time to time, too, and I thought it was just tinnitus. And I said, well, pay attention to it. You know, are your pets watching something in the room when you hear the ear ringing? Does it move back and forth? So it's been interesting.
It's been a long road.
Oh, yeah, it has. But it's spoken up. I haven't had any negative attachments since, and so a lot of what I'm doing is definitely helping. And I do have a couple friends that work remotely, and they can, you know, kind of pull, if I get something sticky or something not so nice on me, they can pull them off of me. Michael Robichon, I'm saying.
Yep.
It has been great. He's helped me probably 3 times remotely, which is weird to me. You know, being a skeptic on most things, I can tell you that this remote astral projection, the remote viewing, it does work. And because he's eliminated things that I know were there, and then after he was done, they're gone. So proof is in the pudding.
That's just amazing.
Yeah.
Somebody can help like that. What would a lot of us, not Jeff included, but we kind of protect ourselves, and whatever ritual or whatever you believe in or whatever higher power or whatever, I think that you should go into any paranormal investigation protecting yourself and thinking in a positive manner, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And a lot of it is in your belief system and what you attach your faith to. I think a lot of it is in you, like the protection is in you. If you believe that your cross around your neck is going to keep you protected, then you're empowering it. If you feel the stone in your pocket is going to repel ghosts, then you're empowering it. So basically, the ability is already inside of you. You're just something that gives you like a totem, you know, makes you believe that you have more ability, and you know, when you really, you know, had it all along, kind of like Dorothy clicking her heels.
Yeah. What do you do when you go on a paranormal investigation? What do you do first to protect yourself?
I ground and I build a shield. Yep. So I've learned how to manipulate my energy so that I'm a little slippery, so they can't just attach on to me. I always carry protection stones. I like to feel them in my pocket. It makes me feel like I'm doing something. I was wearing a crucifix for a long time, but that's the point where I realized that a lot of what I'm doing is my own ability, you know, my own, I'm pushing them off myself instead of believing that, you know, whatever I'm wearing is doing it. So I use my guides a lot. I've developed a relationship with my guides, and I tell them, look, you know, I don't want anything calling me home. You guys need to jump in and help me.
Yep.
And they do. Like, they make a different sound, so I hear when they come in. Sometimes they'll come in when I'm not aware there's another ghost in the room, and that kind of tips me off that I need to be careful because they're jumping in.
Right. Mr. Lovasco. Hello, Peter. Having all kinds of fun issues tonight. So what happens on Blog Talk?